Here we go. Welcome, everybody. BNP Weekly, episode 138. It is 11th of October, 2022. And in BNP Weekly, we talk about the latest on Microsoft 365 platform as a whole.
What? 2022.
2021. Yeah.
This is the episode from the future.
Wow. No idea what year it is. Even.
I was so convinced. You're like going like, I was like, what did I miss?
Just a year, so it's okay. Yeah. But today we'll have Carmen and Luis talking about the provisioning genie. So let's jump on that one in a second. And then after that, we'll have the articles and close up then today after that. But this doesn't work at all. Yeah. Now let's jump on the interview with Carmen and Luis. I think that went pretty okay. This intro clearly did it.
You can clearly see we're pros at this, right?
Cool. So welcome, Carmen. Welcome, Luis, to the BNP Weekly episode 138. And thank you, by the way, Walde, for having that in the agenda, because otherwise I wouldn't have
been here the whole week.
Yes. but thank you for joining us. And of course, we wanted to talk with you a bit about your new open source solution, which you published in a GitHub, and the learnings on that and technology on that. But before we go there, let's talk about actually your background first, and how did you end up in being an MVP. You both are, Carmen, you're an MVP as well.
No, not yet. Yes. And we need to fix
not
this
to
very soon.
not to self.
So, okay, I'm adding some notes. But how did you end up in IT, and what's your background as well? Luis, you've been actually in our show before, but let's start with you and then go to Carmen after that.
Sure. So, hi, my name is Luisa Frese. I'm from Germany. I am an MVP for Office Apps and Services. I work as an M365 consultant and Power Platform developer. And my background is non-IT. So I come from a business communications background, and I just stumbled in IT just like by accident, but I stayed here on purpose, and I love to make apps.
Why do you love to make apps? Just out of curiosity.
It's just like you make something out of nothing, and then you just like add value to people's life every single day. And this is just like super rewarding for me, and this is what makes me happy.
That's a good statement, actually. That's a really good one. So, Carmen, what about you? What's your background?
I'm Carmen. I'm from Belgium. I've been into technology since I started my studies. I studied engineering, and then I rolled into IT. And I rolled into SharePoint, as a lot of people roll into SharePoint. And then building on SharePoint, I started building Canvas apps. And now Power Platform is almost all I do, because I love the platform. I love making solutions on it. So that's what I do now.
Cool.
And you work as a, what's your role actually in day-to-day life?
I'm a Power Platform developer, or something like that. Yeah, we don't have an exact title. It's sometimes difficult. But I see myself as a Power Platform developer right now.
Yeah, I think, titles doesn't matter actually that much.
Well, I mean, they simplify, like at times they simplify.
Do they really?
It depends on the title.
Yeah.
It tells me more than somebody saying, I help customers get the most out of the. Okay, so what do you do exactly?
Yeah, but come on. I'm a program manager at Microsoft. What does that mean?
I know exactly what you do.
Do you? I know.
PowerPoint. You do PowerPoint. You don't code. There you go. You meet people.
You do the slides.
Yes.
He makes the best slides ever. If you ever need a deck, he's your man.
Okay, so now I'm taking notes, okay?
Yes.
Okay, so thank you for the intros, but can either one of you actually just talk about the provisioning genie? What was that all about?
Elevator pitch. What is
no pressure.
Genie?
You have 30 seconds, starting now.
So what is provisioning genie? So we thought it would be a very, very cool idea to make users understand what is a team inside of Microsoft Teams, because most people do not use this correctly, and this way they can't leverage the entire power of Microsoft Teams. And then we wanted to have this blended experience of learning content while we would provision what they exactly need to achieve their goals, because it's not a one-size-fits-all t-shirt. And this idea of providing templates, they don't really fit. And this way we thought, okay, so we want to have customized teams to basically just like meet the very, very unique needs of a team and then provision this as a personal app for teams. And then we open sourced it.
Yeah, yes. And is, so you're basically, you have more guided structure than for the provisioning, and you're able to then define more precisely the things which are available. What about the technology? How is it actually working?
Well, we have two or three parts to the solution. One is a Power Platform. It's a Canvas app with Dataverse tables for the backend to store the data. And then the whole workflow, actually creating the team and all of the other resources inside of it, that is done in Azure Logic Apps.
Cool.
And why? Really? So if you already have a piece of the app in the Logic Apps, why not use things like table storage or queues on Azure and just keep the UI in Power Platform? In other words, what is the benefit that you get from the Dataverse?
Well, it's a lot easier to set up.
Okay.
Being that we're both coming from the low-code side, so going to Logic Apps, and then the whole deployment was already a big step for both of us. And it's a lot easier to set up. We have the built-in security, which is familiar for us. So that's why we went with Dataverse. And it's still a scalable solution.
Plus, it's just like one more thing because of performance. Because if you measure the performance of different backends, Dataverse is by far the fastest because it's built in. So data does not need to travel anywhere. And this is why we also chose.
Gotcha.
To go for Dataverse.
And most likely it's because there's no additional authentication jumps or validations and all of that impact.
Of course there is.
Of course there is, but it's handled
without us knowing that.
Yeah.
You don't have to care about that.
Exactly. That is an important part.
It is there and it works automatically. Yes.
Yes.
So what was, when you build the whole thing, what was the most challenging part? I mean, probably auth, but that aside, anything else?
No, auth was not a problem at all.
Not a problem. That's a first.
No. yes. You may quote me on that.
Auth was not a problem.
So I think the whole process of deploying, that was really a stretch for us because we did never do this before. And so we just said, okay, and then we need to, somehow they need to publish it. And wow. So this was really a stretch for us, but I think now it works and we receive a lot of good feedback for accurate documentation and that this works smoothly. But I would say it was harder than creating the entire app.
So let me rephrase that if I got that correctly. So basically, it was relatively easy to build the solution with the bits and pieces what we have in Microsoft 365 in a single tenant. But then extracting that as a deployable solution to get to another tenants is the challenge.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, it was. Because usually it's not. So there are no very, very good examples other than a very few Teams app templates that really do this, just like from a Power
Except
Platform
now.
Perspective.
Now you have.
Yes.
Now
yes,
we have
yes.
a sample.
So now we do. So thank you. But there was not just like a big pool of references that we had to rely on and see, hey, okay, so this is how it's done. So, so it felt like make two steps forward and one back and then just like again and back and forth. And so we had a lot of meetings and we needed to drink a lot of coffee.
Let's say
coffee.
That's fair as well. So now I guess that's one of the kind of a classic challenges quite often for Microsoft development areas, because we're trying to abstract the complexity. So then for the developers, is it a low code, no code, or pro developers, they don't necessarily understand what happens behind the scenes. And then when somebody says, well, okay, that's cool, can I get it deployed in my environment? It's like, well, I don't know.
I can imagine. It depends also on the type of app you build. I mean, if you build a web app that you connect to M365, and well, that is a web app that already lives on a URL that anybody can access, right? Whereas in as like a power app, I don't know to what extent the design approach there is that it's primarily meant for use inside org, and then when you want to get it out of your org to some other org, that is a scenario that requires some more work that you don't get to do every day, which is why it's not as simple.
But how does that work? How does that piece work? So now that you have the solution, you figure it out, it's insanely cool. And then you start figuring out, okay, how do I extract this? Or what is the process of that?
You write a really long Word document.
I know. That's what we used to do in the past as well for other platforms.
No, probably not.
Is that the solution?
No, we just wrote a very long MK docs on GitHub. Like markdown document on GitHub.
Yeah, so it is very lengthy. It is just like, so the scroll bar is very, very small. This is a very, very lengthy document.
So is that the case because there is no way to automate it, or just in for sake of time, you didn't get to it?
Okay, yeah. So,
But we didn't get to it yet.
Okay.
Plus, we've made our documentation for deploying it on your own tenant very exhaustive, so that and every step that we say you gotta take, we either explain it or we link you to the page where you can find that information, so that people don't have to search for, if you say you need to create a resource group with a container inside it and then upload your templates, yeah, we'll explain how you can create that resource group and upload your template so that you don't have to go look for that somewhere else.
Which is basically the way the docs are supposed to be. Like, you explain everything in place and you don't assume anything. Like,
but they're not always like that.
Yeah, that's
what
true.
Is a token? What token?
Well, so let me tell everyone, just like, so writing docs that are just like accurate, that do not assume, just like having upfront knowledge, or just say, yeah, it's totally clear that you need to do this or that upfront. So because everyone knows that, I don't.
Just have the token. So put the token in here.
Just like the token. You know, and where did I get this token from? I have no clue where I could
wherever
obtain
you want.
This
like there is one on the street right there. There you go.
Okay.
There.
Can you borrow me your token perhaps?
No, you don't share a token. One does not share a token.
So you find it on the street, but you don't share it.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
So
yes,
find the keepers.
Okay, so I'm taking notes again.
This is really good clarification how tokens are being received.
But it is really hard to not assume anything and just like to look at it each time, just like as if you were just like how is it called in Men in Black?
Beginner's mind.
When they do this thing and no, okay.
Men in Black, they do the light boom.
Yes, exactly.
We're not allowed to use Universal franchise.
Oh.
Okay, here we go. Now we're getting sued.
Yeah, it's on me. Okay. But that was really, really hard. And so now we have these docs, and we chose to do just like everything manually for our very first release, but I'm already working on making this just like a little bit more automated, and we will get there.
Yeah.
Eventually.
And one thing that I have to say, that this is provisioning Genie is a really awesome example on how you should be showing in your GitHub README what it is. Because in so many times, people create absolutely brilliant stuff. They put it in a GitHub, and then the README is saying, this is cool. And it's like, okay, but what is it? Or can you put a screenshot out of it? Something which will spark a desire to install that and get moving. And Provisioning Genie is doing a really good job on that.
So
really kind of showing how it is working. So
yeah, and soon we will have Provisioning Genie for Provisioning Genie.
Yeah, right.
Is that coming? Is it right?
That is quite meta.
Provision Genie.
But unfortunately, quite often, and that's one kind of a learning. And we'll talk about learnings actually going open source as well. But Provisioning Genie, as I said, a really good example of a really good clean README file with the GIF animation, all of that, showing what this is all about, so that the people who arrive to it, they actually can understand what it is, because there's so much awesome code out there in a GitHub, but then there's no pictures, there's no clarification, no guidance how to get it up and running or install that to your environment or anything. It's a kind of a missed opportunity. So if you, in general, if you write something in open source, please, please, please do the extra 10%. Clarify what it is and have the descriptions and all of that of it in place. So, and by the way, same applies for the user your profile in a GitHub, because there's good people who contributed, for example, in our open source efforts, and then you go and have a look on, okay, who they are, and their profile is code name, and you're like, well, I can't give you credits.
That's on purpose. Some people don't want to be internet famous, right?
Yeah.
Another thing I wanted to ask, right? So it is Genie. Does it mean you can create only three teams?
Oh, good question.
So very, very good question. So this is not the Disney Genie. So it will just like give you all the wishes that you have. And so we always say your wish is my command, ask the Genie, and it's not limited to three teams.
I have two more things I wanted to ask two of you.
Yeah.
One is, for each one, what was the one thing you learned along the way? Like, if there's one thing you picked, like, there was eye openers, like, or you didn't know that that was a thing.
Works on my machine is actually true.
Okay.
So much.
Yes. Works on my cloud.
Yes.
Works on my Azure tenants.
Yeah. So works on my tenants. So here as well. So when we were developing, of course, each of us had their responsibilities. And when we tried to integrate what we did, oh boy. We will not talk about this again. So that was
maybe
really
eventually one day, right? But I mean, the wound is still too fresh.
Yes, it is. I was just like, damn. So what I learned is I learned a lot about security roles in Dataverse, because that was causing one of the issues that we had when integrating our parts. And it's a built-in feature in Dataverse, which allows you to have role-based access control, which means it is just like super easy to granularly control who can do what with which piece of data in Dataverse. And of course, we saw a lot of provisioning minimal viable products. Before we built our Provision Genie, we did as well. And they were always like focusing on, or they were using Power Automate flows, and then they would store stuff in a SharePoint list. And this is cool for a minimal viable product. And we always say we love SharePoint for content and collaboration.
Yes.
We did not think that SharePoint is just like a very, very good place to
store.
It's not a database. Your SharePoint list ain't database. So even if you like it very, very much, and we do love SharePoint, but it's not meant to be for that. And if we did this in a SharePoint list, we needed to share the entire list with each and every single user, which means that every user could just like bypass our sweet little Canvas app.
Yeah, because you would have to have read and write permission to the list as well. Because, yeah, that's true.
That was one reason to really deal with Dataverse and let me dig deeper into Dataverse as well. And I learned a lot about security roles, and it's highly recommended for everyone out there who's just like, so what is Dataverse? Please read about that.
Cool. So that was one. And two is, what is the next thing you would like to personally add to Genie?
So much.
You can only pick one.
So we are right now working on adding members to a team. So in our initial release, you could not add additional members to the team, but this is what we are working on right now for the next version.
Okay.
And what I want to see added is, now we provision one list and one library, or we can provision one list and one library inside the team. But right now that's still hidden in the SharePoint side behind the team. So we want to also add that to a specific channel in the team as a tab, so that it's more easily accessible.
Yeah, cool. Makes perfect sense. more and more native. There's going to be more and more native ways of also doing that within the product sooner or later, but we can't go too much details there. But of course, behind of every single team, there's a SharePoint side, and we want to integrate this to be really the one way of, or easily available, and make it more visible that that option is available as well. So there's a good alignment coming with Teams and SharePoint and OneDrive across the board. Now, I wanted to ask actually, why open source? Just out of, not that I want to challenge that, but it's like, why? What made you want to have this open source? What is the objective?
Well, I feel like we had three choices in the beginning. Either we would build this for ourselves and then use it at our customers, but not share it with anyone else, or we would offer it as a product, which would then mean that we had to have an SLA, and we had customers who then, if there is an issue, we need to solve that quickly, and it's a two-woman show, so ain't gonna happen. And then the third option was to open source it so that at the same time everyone could benefit from it, because we believe it's a great solution, and we would also have less of a responsibility, as it's still our solution, and we will try to maintain it. We will look after the GitHub repository, look at the pull requests, keep adding functionality ourselves. But if something doesn't work on someone else's tenant, it's not our responsibility. We will help you to solve it, but we don't have a specific time frame in which we need to do that, or otherwise we are at fault.
Yeah, right. And yes. This way you do get, as you're sharing stuff openly, you get more visibility as well. That's the one of the benefits of open source, if you do that wisely and keep on sharing and keep on promoting that this is available. So,
yeah. So for me, it was, so of course, this all applies to me as well. And yes, again, so we did not want to sell it because we already have jobs, and which are quite just, so the agenda is already full. And we both have pretty much on our plates, but we both wanted to take this as a learning opportunity because none of us had open source an entire product before. And this is like, so I always need to do stuff that I never did before. And I'm just like curious how this works. And I learned so much on that. So I think we both did. And it's just like exciting to share this in the open and to build in public and to even talk about, hey, this did not work again, and tell people about it. And then people will jump in and give you just like perhaps a little hint to that puzzle piece that is still missing for you. And I think it's a great opportunity to learn from community as well.
Yeah.
Well, so, also to learn a lot too, because like if you look at this, like there's the portion of the app, which is already a lot because you touch Power Platform, Teams, Power Apps, Power Logic Apps, Dataverse. Like there's already a lot just in there, not to mention off. Right. But there's also this other side to it. Open source, GitHub Action, workflow, issue templates, licensing, the whole open source side to it. It's a lot.
But just out of
and
curiosity,
then the major learning. So the major learning ever. The major learning was it is super hard to decide which features will make it into your first release. It is just
welcome to product management.
Yes. So we
that's
were
thing
not,
you learn now, right?
We were not aware of that, but so and finally we needed to make a cut and say, okay. So instead of having just like a gazillion of half-baked features, we need to focus on these, I don't know, five things. And
well,
if that
so
works,
now the question is, do you have a roadmap?
Of course we do.
Okay, there you go.
So we decided to, from now on, only work on one feature at a time. And after that is implemented, decide on which feature will make it next. And if we do have contributors, of course, they are invited to collaborate. But yes, so this makes then the roadmap. But we will not commit just like, hey, and in the specific order we will implement for the next
on
3 years.
On Wednesday,
this
we're going to ship.
Yes.
Hey, Wednesday.
I want to still a bit come back on the open source discussion and all of that, because the sort of provision engine is MIT license. So that basically technically means that anybody can pull it down and they can package that to their own product and then start selling kind of, mm-hmm. or at least the conceptual ideas and all on top of that. Of course,
everything.
Not with
they
the same
can,
name.
The code,
they can, yeah, exactly. But
everything.
What's the mental mindset related on basically giving away your time, your outcome, your product free for everybody else? Because again, the different mindset would be that, well, this is my precious. And even though I don't have time right now to make millions out of this, I'm not going to share it because I don't want anybody else to make millions out of my idea. So what's the mental mindset behind of that decision? Because that quite often comes as a discussion point related on open source versus not open source.
Carmen, I will give you the first shot.
Well, we do not want to, we haven't built Provision Genie just for our own gain, so to speak, to, I don't know, sometime maybe sell it and then make money off it. It's like Louisa said, learning is for both of us really important. And so we both learned so much. And that is the most valuable thing, I think, that we both, or at least I gained from Provision Genie, is that I learned so much, and that will nobody can take that away from me, even if they then package Provision Genie and sell it. Well, good for them. If they can do that, they have the time, then go ahead, because it's a great solution and they just should get the chance to do that. But for me, it's the learning and it's being able to contribute and gaining more visibility in the community, being able to promote Provision Genie. That's what's most important for me.
Makes sense.
Cool.
Yeah. So, yet again, totally aligns what I think about this. So I love open source. I do not need this to monetize directly. But of course, if you build a product and you're successful with that and people like it, and so we only published just like, I don't know, 2 weeks before this recording, but people seem to like it already, then this means you gain visibility and you also gain credibility. And this means people now know what you're capable of. And of course, there is a return on investment. So everything that we do in community has a certain return on investment, even if I don't get paid to put out correct docs or to provide an app or to host a session or whatever it is, there is a return on investment. So yes, I love to share, and we always say sharing is caring, but it's not that. It's just like super pure altruism. Of course, it does monetize in the end. So it is just like, it's karma, just like a little bit. So, yep. And she's a very nice girl. So we are besties, right?
Who is this karma person? No, just kidding.
when you worked on it, right? Like, did you keep a list of everything you learned along the way, so that afterwards, like let's say after V1, which is now, you can have this list of articles you can write, videos you can record, basically material you could create to help others avoid the same pitfalls as you experienced by yourself along the way?
We did not do that. I don't have a list written down somewhere. No.
No.
That's a good idea, but that's one of you being highly structural. So that's your style of doing this stuff. So
yeah. So I have something that I call my learning diary, where I just like write all my frustrations about tech down.
Dear diary, today I'm working on auth. Apostrophe, exclamation mark, pound, at sign, dollar, exclamation.
Yeah, so I have something that I call my learning diary in which I will note what I learned and what I struggle with, and just like article recommendations, or I take notes with whom I should talk about something, because if I don't understand, I can't be the only one that does not understand. So it is more like that. It's not filtered by this is what I learned in Provision Genie, because of course I do more than just Provision Genie, although this took a lot of my time, but it's a very, very great suggestion to go over that learning diary again and have a look at it with Carmen together, and then see, okay, so this is what we learned. So if you face yourself in the same position of wanting to open source something, or doing stuff in Dataverse, or you need to deploy now, that it could be just a little bit complicated, please have a look here.
But that's actually, by the way, well, like an awesome suggestion and in general, because again, that could be a great series of articles explaining from an idea to the outcome and then making that as a continuum where we basically say, okay, so version 1.0, we made these decisions because of these things and kind of an explaining that process, because a lot of people are not aware how products are being done and not aware that quite often you need to chop 80% of the ideas so you get something shipped, and then you keep on evolving that. And then the key is the consistency and being persistent on that. Anyway,
yeah. Well,
and I guess it is two ways, right? Because the one hand is the product itself, as you said, like how you plan product, plan trade-offs, what do you get in, what is out, what is not now. But then there's also this whole another aspect to it. I don't know. Let's say you want to do managed identity. How do you do that? Like, where do you start? How do you even realize it's a thing? Like, that whole thing around it, if it's new to you, the odds are high it's new for anybody else too. Right? Yeah. So there's a group of folks, like, for maybe one, each person that knows, there are nine who don't.
Yep.
Right? At least.
So exactly, like, because you have just experienced that firsthand, you went through exactly the same, like, aha, I didn't. Well, now you do. So how did you get there? What resources made you aware? Who made you aware? How would you help others? Like all the thing that once you know, it's just, yeah, but everybody knows. Well, they don't.
Yeah,
like ten minutes ago, you didn't know yourself, right? So how can we help others with this, avoid the same paper cuts in a way?
That's for sure the key learning, which we talked about this one with Wildeck pretty much on a daily basis as we're planning the community stuff and all of that. But it's the mental mindset quite often is that all of the people understand exactly the same level as you do. And no, I don't want to go and share this in the community call because, you know, everybody knows this already. No, they don't. They just don't. So maybe some people know, but the mental mindset of I want to talk about the 400th level deep dives. Well, there's two persons out of 200 who might be interested on that because the 198 would not understand what you're talking. So it's really hard always on the level setting and understanding that what is your core audience and how to reach the people. So. And we tend to be way too complex in a lot of our messaging. So.
Yeah, but it's also an issue. So if your product spans with like a lot of areas, then Microsoft doesn't make it super easy for you to leverage that.
Sure.
So speaking of managed identity, so yes, we do use managed identity. And we both come from a Power Platform and L365 background. Non-development. So the communications in a Power Platform area for managed identity, it's just like below zero. So no one tells you that this is a thing. So
there you go, right?
So even if you're super active in your area, no one tells you that this is a thing. So you need to always look left and right, and you need to dip your toes into development, and you need to dip your toes into Azure, and you just need to look everywhere just to see, this is available and it would make sense in my Power Platform solution.
Yeah.
Because it does.
Yeah.
Now, from a timing perspective, we're again going too long, which is quite typical, but that's fine. So super, super interesting discussion. Now, let's do a final, let's say, switch on a bit on the topic and then close after that. You both are women in IT. What would be your top three? Top three tips while they behave. Top three tips for anybody who's looking into going to IT or starting their career as a woman in IT. So three tips if something comes to mind. Doesn't have to be three.
Do the very same thing that guys would do. That's my first tip. Learn and share in the open. It's just like it's super crucial, and don't be afraid to fail because it will just happen.
Yeah. I would add, don't be afraid to speak your voice. So if you have something to say, say it. Don't be scared just because you're a woman. If you don't feel comfortable with what people might send you, then just don't have open DMs on Twitter or on whatever, on LinkedIn even. And be yourself, because even though you're in man-dominated world, you're still a woman. And if I'm a girly girl, so I still am myself, I try to be myself as much as possible. If I go to work, I go to work often in a dress, and that's strange, but it's me. So I'm just myself.
Being yourself.
Why is it strange? You dress the way you want to dress.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
But it can be difficult.
Yeah.
I can imagine that people have opinions about you, which is like, don't you have
why would any of that actually,
but
none
there
of that
will
should
be,
matter. So,
yeah, but there will be people that will like what you do, regardless what you do. So you just you.
Haters will hate.
But it's better to just like say makers gonna make, because we are makers and we would just like flip around and say, hey, we did just do what we like to do.
Yeah. Ignore those voices. Just keep on doing and making stuff. So which is good. Good way of going forward for sure. I think that's it. And then let's do a quick round. What's anything interesting was happening this week for you? So something which happened last week, or what are you going to do this week? It is Monday. What day is it? Monday.
October 11, 2028. We have 15th round of boosters against the 23rd epidemic of COVID.
Okay.
This week, both Carmen and I will travel to UK, and we will both participate in a hackathon and an in-person conference. So it's also a summit.
Crazy, right?
Totally.
It is super crazy. So we will meet people, and we both will meet again after, I think it's almost 2 years, and it's just like super exciting. Wow. And
we will meet in person the first time since we started building Provision Genie.
By the way, which proves that we can do remote work together, which is really, really cool as well. But that's actually mind-blowing. And is that your first in-person setup after the... Okay.
Yeah.
And then obviously later in autumn, there's the Collab Summit, which is going to be thousands of people in Düsseldorf. So it seems it's getting a lot of attraction. So it seems to be the thing where people are coming to finally be open and meeting people. And of course, Las Vegas in the US having the collaboration. What is it nowadays called? Collab Conference? What is it?
North America Collaboration.
M365.
Collab North America? Oh, no.
No, not the NACS.
So it is the event that has been the SharePoint conference, right?
Yes.
The
event
previously known as SharePoint conference.
Yeah. But nowadays, that is not about only SharePoint anymore. They needed to come up with a better name. So, yeah. But also looking forward, of course, to Collab Summit, because this is my city.
It is called Microsoft 365 Collaboration Conference. Las Vegas, December 7th. So there we go. So, but most likely we will not see that many Europeans in there, and we'll probably not see that many US people in Düsseldorf because of the, I guess the flights are now open, but sitting 15 hours in a plane with mask on, it doesn't feel nice. So.
No, it's not.
Anything interesting, Waldeck, on you on this week?
On me?
Schedule. Putting you on the spot. What is this pride like?
This week I'll be still working on a new learning path, new learn content for Viva Connections and how to extend that. So that is still work in progress on my end, and will probably stay for another few weeks. Other than that, last week we released new version of CLI from Microsoft 365, V4, and this week we are on V4.1 beta. So the work just keeps going on. Other than that, from any big rocks, no, don't think so. That there are just meetings, interviews, meeting people, doing things, the usual
meetings, typical stuff,
a few of them.
And then on my side, just a recap. Well, of course, SharePoint Framework 1.13 is coming out in days, is probably fair to say, unless there's a last-minute surprise. So we're finally getting that out.
300 days is also days, right?
Yeah.
That is true. And there'll never have been any surprises last minute,
no,
right?
No, never, never. There's never surprises. And one of the challenges on pushing out something like Yeoman Generator for SharePoint Framework is that there's the client-side dependency, and then there's the server-side dependency. So if there's a client-side dependency, let's say last-minute findings, it's okay. We can do the chains, and then we'll publish the 1.13. unfortunately, if there's a server-side dependency change, then there's always at least 2 weeks delay because it takes roughly 2 weeks to get the code change in and then rolled out across servers in the world, unless it's a super critical or urgent thing which has to be going there right now. And of course, if it's a future product and future version, those quite rarely are not the case. So those urgent things are only for really actually
fixes.
Urgent things. So
fixes.
But it's an interesting challenge for sure. We're trying to move the 4 times in a year release cycle with the SharePoint framework, but we keep on failing on that kind of, but moving there and learning. So we'll be there hopefully next calendar year. So that should be fine. But right after this, anyway,
for people on podcast rounds. who were unable to see the video, Vesa did a sound and showed rollerblades. Is that the official name for it? Rollerblades.
Yeah, inline skates. Yeah.
Inline skates with 3 wheels suited for off-road skating.
No, that's not off-road. So I have a separate off-road skates. So it's okay.
Yeah, with chains, right?
Yeah. Oh, the winter ones. Yeah, the spikes would be actually really good. That's a great idea, by the way. Anyway, I think that's it for this one. Thank you, Carmen. Thank you, Luis, for joining us. Really good discussion. Thank you, Waldeck, once again, being here as a co-host. Okay. And right after this interview, we're going to jump into the weekly articles and then to cover what's the latest on the community and Microsoft side. But thank you both. We'll stay in touch.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Cool. So welcome back welcome back. Let's go to articles.
Articles.
Articles for this week. Articles. Okay. So the latest from Microsoft side. So first of all, a SharePoint roadmap BitSwap came out on week ago, actually on Monday, but because we recorded our stuff on Monday as well, we covered the September update from Teams, but we didn't cover the SharePoint because this one was not yet out. There's a good, actually, intra-zone discussion in here as well, related on what's running out on SharePoint into Microsoft 365. Discussions with people, UX designers, Sam and Raghul, around the designing side of the house. And then the latest news, which is basically VR Connection, now in public preview, heading to GA relatively soon. SPFX 1.13 is the development side of the house. That's going to go actually potentially to GA before the UX side, which is kind of understandable. It's okay. So we are pushing that one out. A lot of new stuff available here as well related on new settings. This one, by the way, is actually quite interesting because getting questions related on it. So we're able to basically now adjust the navigation in a SharePoint team sites. So you can basically disable that or move that to be horizontal if needed, or you can actually just get the navigation away. So the SharePoint team site therefore transformed to be exactly what the communication sites are. So we're heading more and more aligned to the direction where we have just a SharePoint site, and then it's a matter of which settings are enabled. So it's the underlying template doesn't anymore matter, which is good. So likely should have actually been already there in 5 years ago, but hey, one step at a time. And a lot of news on the related technologies as well. So things which are linking directly on SharePoint and OneDrive, because they are the content management and the platform is for Microsoft 365. So a lot of hardcore stuff in here. What was in the teasers, by the way? SharePoint Hub to Hub Association and Microsoft List Calendar View List Web Parts. Hub to Hub Association is being rolling currently. So a lot of questions on that one. It's been a bit delayed since the first time we showed it. Now, something new on the Microsoft Teams side, and this is really big thing, actually, is that the developer portal for Microsoft Teams is now out, GA, so it's generally available. It will replace the App Studio. So it will basically replace the App Studio, which you used to use in Microsoft Teams for creating the manifest or uploading manifest file. You're basically going to use the developer portal for it. The functionalities are exactly the same. And then in the developer portal, there's additional capabilities as well, like creating the together mode pictures and all of that stuff. So a lot of cool stuff in here. And there's going to be further investments and functionalities added in here. It's easier for us to evolve this portal rather than just thinking, how do we evolve the App Studio and all of that? And it's kind of, it's been a kind of understandable, but kind of awkward as well, that the developer experience is an app inside of the Microsoft Teams. It's kind of meta. So now it's more clear what is actually available. And we'll have Kartik, hopefully pretty soon, actually in the community calls to talk about the latest here as well. Now, on the cloud storage partner side, there was an announcement in Microsoft 365 developer blog from Ben Summers related on a real-time co-authoring in Office and desktop, web and mobile. And what this means is that even though the file is not being stored in the Microsoft 365, rather in some of the cloud storage partner providers, it can have still real-time co-authoring capabilities. And that's what this is all about, basically, having that seamless integration to the backend, regardless of that not being Microsoft 365. Really cool stuff.
Yep.
Then there was a breaking changes announcement on the Microsoft Graph eDiscovery API. So nothing too major. And basically, the update here is that a setting resource has been renamed as case settings because we don't want to have multiple different objects called settings, which have a different shape, so to say.
Yeah.
So then it's good to rename to be case settings. Of course, this will have a potential breaking change on the solution, so something to be aware.
But the API is still in preview, right? So that is kind of justified, and it's like the change is still in preview, so it shouldn't affect any production workloads.
Correct. Yes, absolutely. Now, and that's actually the change, so that settings API is going to be case settings in the future. So that's going to be updated in the docs as well. Now, there was a really cool blog post from Marcus Miller related on meeting and feedback with Microsoft Teams meeting app. And this is basically a great idea of building a meeting post-meeting experience for getting thumbs up, thumbs down experience and collecting the feedback from the attendee. That's actually a real cool real-world scenario. At least in Scandinavia, there's quite often when you go to a normal grocery shop or, let's say, electronic shop, there's always the post experience. There's the red and yellow and orange and green buttons to press, and getting kind of feedback from the people who are walking out. Was this good or was this not? There's a lot of interest on these kind of things, for sure. So really, really cool setup, how to make that work and how to build this kind of an experience. So really cool stuff. So hanging up, and then the bot sends the message after you're hanging up. So that's actually really cool.
Yeah.
Now, Todd Clint had a how to get Microsoft 365 connected user with PMP PowerShell. So how to do that? Good clarification how to get started and get that additional information using CSAM objects. So basically loading stuff from here. Good clarification on that. There was a interesting discussion between Daniel and Daryl on the Viva Learning preview moving to general availability. I, to be honest, I haven't seen any public announcements on this, but we did push out an update on the message center, which is the let's say the official source for everything what's happening. We're always sending updates for the message center, which is then tenant administrators can see all of that, those announcements. And that's what this show is, by the way, all about, is covering what's coming in the message center as announcements. And then Daryl and Daniel are talking about those things. So really good stuff as well. Then Liam Cleary had a blog post around script connecting Microsoft 365 using Microsoft Graph PowerShell. So how do we do that? How to get started? How do we install the Microsoft Graph module and get started on things as well? So really cool stuff as a reference on that one. Should help on people to get moving. Mark D. Anderson had a blog post on adding a location column to a site content type. And location column is something which says, it's been there for a long time, but it's kind of semi-hidden to be able to use it. I think originally even in on-prem at some point, but it's something, it has a bit of a different way of doing things. And he's showing how to do that nowadays in the UX, actually. So you can actually do that UX, and what does it then mean, and how to enable that to be available. Okay. That's actually a good point for those who are really, really up to date. What is a content type? It is a bit of an interesting thing that this checkbox is not check on by default, which would mean that when you're editing something in a site content type level, it will not propagate the changes in the instances which are in the library level, unless you will check that checkbox, which should be by default always checked. So the experience is a bit of a kind of a promoting a wrong way to do by default, but that's that's on us. Now, two more. We had a blog post from Laura Rogers. So quick charge, SharePoint / Microsoft list data. So how to do a quick charge from there. There's a lot of potential scenarios on this one. Really, you could quite easily replicate data from your business line of business application using, for example, Flow to a SharePoint list and clean it up. So not just expand the list to have millions and millions of items. And then like once a day, having a Flow replicating the data and then showing the data in the web part. So super simple, but super valuable way of doing things without code necessarily. So really cool stuff as well. And then you can actually talk about this one. So there's going to be a, can you all talk about this one? So there's going to be.
Yeah, of course. On October 26th, the Cloud Developer Advocates are organizing an online event about developing real-time collaborative apps. So in this event, you will have the chance to see in action how you can use things like Azure Communication Services, Fluid Framework, Visual Studio Code, CodeSpaces to build apps that allow you to support real-time collaboration.
Yep. But what does real-time collaboration mean? Well, it means that multiple people can adjust information.
Simultaneously work in the editing, same app, yeah, and exactly. You real-time see each other's work.
Yeah, that's actually really, really cool. So that's going to be a two-hour setup on 26th of October. So really cool.
Free to join.
Speakers.
Free to join, yep.
Good speakers as well. So a lot of interest in this one to get people excited and understanding what's possible within the platform. But that's the articles, what we're going to do this week. And there was a lot of other stuff available, of course, in the community. We're trying to a bit slow down on the amount of articles. So talking about just the ones with the hashtag BMP Weekly or the ones which are interesting to call out as well. We already went through this week's activities, actually, in the interview with Luis and Carmen.
Yes.
So there's nothing to talk about anymore.
Well, no, all this done. Is the end, I guess.
It's not an end. It's a start of something completely new.
A new adventure.
Yes, let's go for a new adventure. But thank you, everybody, for watching or listening this week on the BMP Weekly podcast or the video. And please use the hashtag BMP Weekly for tagging the article so we know what is being published. I think the number one problem and what a lot of people in the community also have and we have is that what's all of the new cool things out there? It's really, really hard to follow up on what's available, but help us to do that. And if there's any feedback, let us know. But I guess that's it. Thank you, Baldek. Thank you, Luis and Carmen. One more time. And we'll be back within a week. Cheers.
Bye-bye.